Okay. I'm gonna get away from the umbrella business, but what I wanted to say was another thing that's important to look at that we really didn't recognize at first, and I'm not really sure that it would be important here in this area, although it may become, but in other states, the coalition, if it's coalition or one organization, whatever, if it's, you know, based on that aspect, and that, by the way, is the only way Feminist Credit Union can start is through association, unless you have feminist collective businesses. That's another way, I guess. Except that's more than likely you're not going to have 300. If anybody knows, I'd like to find an organization that's feminist and over 300 people in it. Employed, that is. But it's important for the organizers of any credit union in any state to also look at the organizations that are forming either the coalition or, if it's not coalition, look at that one organization to be sure that they don't limit themselves to a locale.
You mean a geographic locale?
Geographical locale.
In what sense? In their charter application?
In the sense of their charter application. It's always, we always have in the past indicated that the extension of the charter or extension of the field of membership could be done. Yes, it can be done, but it's extremely difficult. And it's much more of a hassle that you have to go through later on. Okay, Detroit went through this hassle to get a little extension and increase in their field of membership.
You mean if you say that you're the Detroit Feminist Credit Union, you can't have members who don't live in the official boundaries of Detroit?
Technically, credit unions have the concept of being fairly local. Therefore, certainly in Detroit, no one outside of Michigan can belong. Okay, there is a state boundary there. Okay, although I'd love to see someone challenge that. It's not been the case yet. But besides Detroit, because of its coalition that uses a federation of women that's identifiable in other sections of Michigan, that's how they set up their branches. They have three branch offices now. And what that does is they're tapping in other areas, surrounding areas, they're tapping the resources of other women, okay? Mm-hmm. And they could do it because their coalition was statewide. Ours is not. Ours, meaning Washington, D.C.'s, is not. We had to, we did specify particular chapters. Okay? Now those chapters have their own bylaws so that it's only the surrounding women, only the women in the surrounding area that can be members of, you know, D.C. Now versus Capitol Hill Now and so on and so forth. Okay?
But the official name is the Washington area.
Washington area.
Which includes Virginia and Maryland suburbs.
As well as the district, right. But we specified the various chapters, all right? Only the National Black Feminists could tap all of Maryland, all of Virginia, and all of Washington, D.C. I'm not even sure whether the Washington Women's Center can do that. I don't know. But now it's locked in.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get Norfolk now unless we amend our field of membership, okay? We can't open a branch down there. We're tied. We're bound. I think that's something that any organizer should really seriously look at is don't think small, think big. You know? If you're in Oregon, don't think just Salem or Ogden. Think the whole state. And if you think the whole state, okay, and you know, I'm assuming that the bigger you think, the more money you're going to get from assets, from contributions and pledges. Then you have to find, identify organizations not that only are consistent with what you are, or not only what are organizations in agreement with your goals and objectives, but that also are flexible enough and broad enough so that they'll apply throughout the state. So if you go for now, try and get national now backing, or the California Now Federation, or some time round table or whatever kind of structure that takes in all of the chapters, or a women's center that has branches throughout, or whatever, you know, or some sort of organizations that are more than just local. I mean, mentally, there's a danger to that. You have branches, and then the question is, who controls? Because the way the credit union is set up, the board, which, like in Detroit, all of them come from Detroit. They're the policy setters. How can they be, you know, supporting Ann Arbor, for instance, which is one of their branches? And then, of course, you have to deal with that whole sort of aspect of branch participation. And so you get into a whole another bag. But I think it's something that each organizer or organizations have to look at and determine what they think is manageable for them.
Because it is a hassle to get your field of membership officially expanded.
It's
once
a hassle.
The limits have been put on it.
It's a hassle, and to my understanding, it also, you can't just turn around and do it. You have to have a track record, sometimes 6 months to a year. So you're denying participation of other women or other organizations that at first, because you wanted to, you know, expedite the whole thing, you limited the number of organizations. And that limiting can limit participation of other women. So, but you have to look at it, and, you know, I mean, you have the choice of local limitation. Okay. You have the choice of 5 credit unions in a state, and you have the choice of going with broad organizations that are represented in throughout a state. Those three, and there's good and bad aspects to all of it. I mean, obviously, if you have all of the state covered in whatever organization you're going with, then you can tap those resources that other women downstate or upstate might have. But you may dilute participation. You may become centralized, and, you know, there's good and bad to that. If you get all 5 credit unions in a state, all feminists, in some sense they'll be competing, unless you can develop this networking business of tying in. I mean, which, you know, tying in feminist credit unions together. And that's a challenge, but it's difficult to do because, you know, the goals and the local women have different opinions, different priorities.
Could you explain the concept of networking a little bit?
Oh. The problem that most beginning feminist credit unions are going to have is limited resources. We may have a lot of women that want to support us, but for whatever reasons, they can't monetarily beyond 1 or 2 shares, what have you. Credit unions really aren't even, I mean, the average size of a federal credit union is beyond 1 million. Then you're doing all right. Okay, Detroit's got 500,000 now, close to. But they've done hard work, and they're in an area where they can do it. generally speaking, you know, we're talking anywhere from $10,000 to a couple hundred thousand. Well, you cannot do too much or have too much impact on the women that are in your membership with that kind of limited resource power. And when you start thinking of various areas in the country, let's make the assumption that the needs of women in all of the United States are basically the same. Okay, that's, I mean, well, I know that's not true, but I want to do it in, for a reason. Let's assume everyone needs the same things. Let's assume we're all unemployed. That's good enough. We're all unemployed. It might happen. All unemployed. We all need money to survive. And we have pockets of money available to us. New York, Boston, San Francisco, Washington. Big cities where there's more money. Then we have podunk Iowa and, you know, Florida, Tallahassee, Florida, or what have you, somewhere down south, where we have women with the same needs, but they don't have the access to the resources. Networking means that we identify through communications with each other, with all the federal credit and feminist credit unions. We identify our needs. We start communicating our goals and objectives to one another. And then we start supporting ourselves by having, in a sense, a cash flow between ourselves. Now, what I'm saying is not, I mean, I haven't formulated in my mind really how that can be achieved legally. But I know for a fact that there are federations, federal credit union federations. And that's going to be the mechanism for all feminist credit unions to join together in a federation, national, and to start working out ways in which we can support one another that are legal, okay? Like, for instance, credit unions can loan money to other credit unions. So we can push that to whatever extent we can go legally, and we do it on short or long term depending on the needs of other small credit unions. And by the shifting of resources among ourselves to, you know, those most in need for at the time, we network in our own resources and we continue a flow that's on a national basis, and we develop support nationally. That's what networking is. And it will be the federation that's going to be the way to go. No doubt of it. So, that's all I have on that.
Yeah.
Before you get an organizer, it's essential that all those who are participating, either the organizations, the organizers, or what have you, one, are very clear as to the goals and the objectives of their feminist credit union. Two, that they have a good sense of, and hopefully written down, a statement as to what their common bond is, what organizations constitute that common bond, and what justification they claim for the common bond. That's really important. Also, that there's complete understanding relative to the various structural context of a credit union, what a board member is responsible for, and so forth. Irrespective of whether or not you as a credit union accept the board as the final say on policy. In the bylaws, that's basically what the board members do. But but you can act collectively, and the board can stamp, rubber stamp, the collective decisions that are made. But you should understand that, not only that, you should have identified resources within the organizations and members who are going to serve in your various positions.
You mean human resources?
Human resources, yeah. It's also a good idea, to one, have an idea of those organizations and what constitutes the membership or your potential field of membership as far as their needs go. Who are you going to be serving? In other words, there'll be questions what does NOW really represent in Northern Virginia or whatever. And you should be able to answer that. You may, have a little written blurb that is a further justification, a further explanation for your common bond that goes into a little more detail on the number of members of each one of the organizations, the purpose of those organizations. Maybe a copy of their bylaws. A lot of these things we knew we had to get, but we didn't have it initially. But you can almost do everything in a night if you have all of that stuff already together. You should have a good idea, if not actual, location of where the credit union is going to be. And that credit union, the office itself. And that should definitely be somewhere that's accessible to most of your membership. If you go statewide, you won't necessarily have to indicate, five separate offices. In fact, I wouldn't even mention, to any organizer what you're trying to do as far as the scope of the involvement of women in the state. There's just no necessity of it, because setting up a branch later on is just bureaucratic and easy to do. So you don't have to worry about that. Or at least Detroit, has the most information on branch involvement and branch development, but they indicated last time I talked to them that there was no problem on setting up branches. Just you have to demonstrate for a while your solvency and the interest. So those are basically what you should have, hopefully written down. Also, at least some idea, if not actual pledges. All these things, this is all in retrospect, because we went through a lot of steps and didn't start pledge processing or any of that stuff until later. But, as I look back, we could have been doing pledges at the time that we were introducing our proposals to the various organizations. As a matter of fact, we did get some verbal pledges from various women and in the organizations after they had voted to participate. It would have been nice if we had had our form. There's a written form that you can get from credit unions, but I would suggest feminist credit unions would be the place to get the forms, pledge forms, and pass them out right there and then, because if they're really enthusiastic, you're going to tap in immediately. And actually, even if some of those pledges may not come to pass because women lose their money or, something happens, it really stimulates the whole organization, not only where that pledge came from, but also the credit union organizers, to even work harder and faster to get that credit union so they can really, really get their hands on that money and that the pledge is translated into money that then can go into loans for women. And so, you know, that's another thing that we didn't do that I would have done, is definitely do that. You know, more explanation of what a credit union is. A lot of women, you know, we were so, because of coming from the feminist class, I guess, we were really so intent with how do we deal, what are our goals, and so on and so forth, feminist connected to a credit union, that except for a brief moment of discussion of credit union and a little blurb, we never really paid attention to the explanation of what a credit union is. And it's amazing the amount of women here who do not really understand what a credit union is.
It's not amazing to me.
Why?
Why should somebody understand what a credit union is?
Well, of course, I'm taking that personally because, you know, yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing. I have that problem, you know. If I know something, I just assume everyone else does too. And that's an assumption we made, and we are now having to go through a process of further specification of what a credit union is to be passed out to the members and the potential women that are going to come, hopefully, into the credit union. All of which, you know, can be expanded on, should be expanded on, and at the time the proposal, a proposal is submitted to the general membership, that they're given that kind of information. See, we missed out on a lot of educational or a lot of chances for education of what we were going through, education of what we were really trying to do, and, you know, so forth. And now we have to, now we've set up an educational committee and a publicity committee, you know, some of which could have been done throughout this whole process. Admittedly, with the 4 to 8 of us, it was very difficult. Resources are limited and takes a hell of a lot of time to organize, get your all the ins and outs and really get a grasp of what a credit union is and how it can work to serve you as a community of women. And then dealing with all the questions, oftentimes repeated, and after a while you almost sound like a tape recorder yourself. And you can't lose, hopefully you don't lose that enthusiasm. But it's easy to do. Yeah. But we missed out on all that, the educational, the documentation. So that now when other people and other women ask from other states, sure, we can give them information and we can tell them some things to watch out for. But there's also other things that we could have mentioned to watch out for that we've forgotten, okay? Or that we only remember sitting over a beer and, you know, saying, oh God, we really did that one wrong and we should have done this and so on and so forth. But you forget, you know, and as time goes, your viewpoints change. And, you know.
Well, that's why we're gonna try to keep with it and catch all these things.
But I think it's, you know, it's crucial for each feminist credit union as they evolve to document the evolution. For no other reason except to measure and see their own growth and to educate new members as they come in. They don't lose that history. You know, I mean, the one danger, you know, right now I think it's really exciting time for the credit union because of all the things they now have to deal with that really get to the nitty gritty, you know, of really we only have $10,000 and really we can't give more than $200 loan maximums out, and we can only give 20 of those. And we have 40 people who need loans for whatever reasons. What's exciting is now, okay, ladies, you know, mm-hmm. or women, certainly, hopefully not gentlemen, we've got to a goal. It says redistribution of assets. How are we going to redistribute when we don't have enough to spread around? We always made the assumption, erroneous assumption, that we were going to have enough money to go around. That we really kind of were babes in that way, that we really thought we'd have enough so that we wouldn't have to make too many decisions on a credit committee basis as far as who was going to get a loan. Detroit always had as much or more money, and we just made the assumption that we would be the same. Well, economically, the world has changed, and it's more than likely the first day opening we're going to have a lot more requests for loans than we're going to have money to supply. And so now, of course, the nitty-gritty is, you know, to apply your goals to the everyday workings. And it's something that you want to keep and know about, okay? And when you start turning down people, women, if those women, one, understand some of the history, okay? Some of the things you went through, some of the things you're trying to do, and that some of the limitations that we have to deal with realistically, you're more apt to not alienate them. You know, in fact, you may get more support from them, and you might be able to support them. You know, I don't think everyone who goes in for a loan necessarily and just thinks right off they're going to get it. Okay, me, to go into a credit union of any other sort, I'd probably be inclined to think that I wouldn't get a loan. And when I go to a feminist credit union, I don't think I'd be crazy enough to think that I'll get one just because I'm a woman. But at least what I'd hope for is fair treatment and understanding about my need. And hopefully, if I knew a little about that credit union, I could also understand, you know, that these women aren't here to rip me off. They're trying to support me. Just so happens maybe they can't today. But what they're doing is not only for today, but for tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. That's, you know, that's the exciting part of it. You know, I feel very sad that I have to leave at this time, because all comes
home. About why you have to leave and what you're going to be doing.
No, I don't think that's applicable to the credit union. Well, I'll say one thing, okay? As an organizer from the beginning, and just a personal thing was why I was ever really gung-ho on credit unions and loans was because I, who made a good salary, was turned down and not given credit. And it irked me, okay, that I, because I was separated or that I was a woman or what have you, was turned down, and I knew men are all around me who didn't make as much money, didn't have such a good work record and all this jazz. And, you know, I really resented the fact. So much so that I was really eager to find some way which could maybe ease the situation or change the situation for other women so that they didn't have to go through that shit. So, you know, I got involved that way, and as an organizer going all the way through up to this point of nearly a year now, have, you know, I mean, it's beyond belief for me. The Feminist Credit Union here in Washington happens to be part of me now. And leaving this area, when I accepted my new position elsewhere, I had to really sit down, not because of the job I had here, but because of the credit union. I had to really sit down and ask myself, you know, what was it personally? How was it personally going to affect me, leaving something that I was so involved in, so totally involved in? What was it also to the credit union and to the other women that I was working with on that organization? What was it to them? Well, personally, to leave very good, close compatriots that you know, worked and changed and grown with is, you know, there's a void there, you know, a sense of loss. But, you know, I got to the point of really, in a way, working out something I've been saying for the last several months, and that is, we are a collective. We indeed are a group of women who are participating on various levels to various degrees for some shared goals. Shared because we experience part or some or most of what we say about financial institutions out there in that big world. And although I, you know, personally take myself physically out of the area and take that kind of time and energy support, I'm still supporting the credit union, number one. And number two, because it's, again, this collective activity, I know that my involvement is just one of many. And in a sense, I have that much faith in the involvement and participation of others that I have no guilt of leaving the credit union. I have no guilt of at one time, several months, and for a long time, saying I was going to support. I was going to have this time and energy. It so happens that now I don't have, because of my new job, can't physically be here to participate in that way. I'll participate in other ways, but I don't feel the guilt on it. And every one of those women who are now in the organization and working hard towards our opening our doors, hopefully in a couple of weeks, understand. You know? And that's what it's all about. That's why we're women and not